Good afternoon. This is Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in program. I'm Brian Shields. It's our Pets and Vets program today. Here to take your calls, Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. Dr. Scharf is a 1985 graduate of the Veterinary College at Cornell and has an extensive background in conventional veterinary medicine. The number to call, 800-348-2551. Again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Also, you can post comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Please provide as much information as you can on your pet, including their age and sex, especially if you're submitting a question online. Again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Dr. Scharf, thanks for coming in today.
You're very welcome, Brian. It's a pleasure to be here.
Why do dogs eat grass? My dog does not eat a lot of grass, but this spring, the last week or so, suddenly she's a cow, and I've been trying to keep her away from the grass, and I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I know what you mean, and many of us have wondered why, Brian. My own particular dog has a fancy for dandelion heads, and she's always eaten them off for the last several weeks. Why they eat grass, I think that a lot of the conventional wisdom is that it helps them clean out their system. It's kind of roughage. I think that that's probably likely. I don't know that anyone knows the gospel bottom line truth about why they do it. I think that sometimes they could overdo it, but I don't think it's common. Sometimes if they overdo it, they can get a gastritis, an inflammation of the stomach, but I think that that's very rare. It's more of a springtime thing. I think it's just cleaning them out.
Does it induce vomiting?
Sometimes it can. Yeah. Absolutely.
So it's sort of a maybe organic way to sort of clear out the digestion system for
them?
They
could clean it out in either direction.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's hope it's the one with the aforementioned one. 800.
The customary direction.
That's right. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. The lines filling up as they always do. And we start today with Jenny and Hudson. Jenny, go ahead.
Hello. I have two questions about cats.
Okay.
I have two cats. They're both 3 years old. There's a male Maine Coon mix and a female Tabby. And I feed them out of a common bowl. They have been getting a cup and a half of dry food every night back in the winter, but I cut them back because the female was getting pear-shaped. She's a chunky little monkey, and I didn't want her getting diabetes. So I cut them back to a cup, and that seemed to be working fine until this week. And they've gone from being able to meter that cup of food all day long to knocking it off overnight and begging for more at 5 a.m. Is it normal for cats to get hungrier in the spring as they get sprung?
I think, Jenny, it probably happens, but not in any kind of dramatic way that it impresses itself on people. I do think, in the wintertime, most of us are more sedentary, including the animals, a lot of them, and that'll require less food intake. But I don't really notice it. I don't think that would be accounting for your situation, put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder. Usually, when there are two cats in the household, and it's oftentimes the case that one of them is heavier than they ought to be, and the other one is not. And when you try to roll back the food so that the heavier one gets less and weighs less, what oftentimes happens is that the thin one, who's not quite as food oriented as the heavy one, will back away and let the overweight one eat the thin ones. So you don't see any of the weight loss on the cat that you want to lose weight. So sometimes you need to separate them.
I did get a pound or two off of the little female.
Cool.
My Maine Coon mix is like 16 pounds, and the little female is 8.
Wow.
He's huge, and he keeps growing.
I'll say so.
He's not a fat cat. He's just tall and muscular.
Wow.
And I don't know if I have to start feeding them more again or what have you.
Well, when she lost a pound or two, where is she in terms of what her ideal weight is?
I'd say she's probably like maybe 8 pounds.
And what's her ideal weight?
I'm not sure. I haven't had them to the vet for their checkup yet this year.
So if she's at her ideal weight, I just continue what you're doing. I don't know when you went from 1.5 cups dry a day to the both of them to 1 cup.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was more than, you know, a week or two ago, it might be the right amount to be giving them.
Okay. My other question that I had, if I have time, is about the Maine Coon. He is very rambunctious, and he's into everything, and he's destroying my house.
Is that something new?
Yeah. He scratches the furniture. He wakes me up at 5 a.m. He wrestles with his sister in the middle of the morning, and he spills water all over the house. The toys that I've gotten him, he's not interested in. Do I have to get him new toys? I mean, I have to make my house more cat-friendly? What would be the technique there?
More cat-friendly is a good way to start, Jenny, but I'm just curious, is this a new behavior for him, or has he always been like that?
No, he gets worse in the springtime. When I first got them last year in March, the first couple of months were really rough, and then by June he had settled down, and now he's at it again.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that you could do what we call enriching his life with encouraging activities that allow him to get his energy out and to have fun, get some good exercise at the same time. And so some examples of that, Jenny, would be, number one, cats love climbing. So putting a little jungle gym from your floor to your ceiling, you know, branches or mm-hmm. 2x4s with perches and places that they could hang out, encourages them to go up and down, get a little activity that way, number one. Number two, it's the good old laser light that hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of cats take to that. Some don't. But if you could play with him on a regular basis daily and give him a good several minutes of, you know, running around, that'll also be good as far as getting his energy taken care of. And also puzzle toys, you know, put the food into something or hide it around the house or make it a way that they are forced to go around, exercise themselves, go from room to room, stalk their so-called prey,
right.
and make it fun for them. So it's fun, it's exercise, and there are things you could do to so-called enrich his life.
Okay, Jenny, thank you very much for calling. Thank you. 800-348-2551, the number to call. Veterinarian Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna Unit today on the program, Pets and Vets, 800-348-2551. Let's talk to Lillian in Beacon. Lillian. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead.
Oh, hi. Hi. I have a very old cat. I'm not sure how old, but I know she's old by the look. And in her old age, she developed a thyroid condition, which I'm treating with this medication, and she developed a skin problem. And so we took her to the vet, and she has these white bumps all over her. And the vet thought, well, maybe an antibiotic might take care of it, because it looked like parts of it were getting infected. Now she's recovered a little, so she looks better. But I have these dry skin fragments and hair falling all over the place. Is there any kind of shampoo or product that I could use on her hair to help her heal better and get rid of all that dead skin?
Okay, so Lillian, it sounds like the antibiotics were helping, and sometimes what will happen is when a medication takes care of a skin problem, you'll have an exfoliation of the old skin.
Better.
And that's normal, and that's proper. And if you want to hasten that, sure, you could use an exfoliating shampoo as one possibility. You can get a shampoo that's designed for seborrheic cats, even if she does not have that. But it helps them shed those old epidermal cells. And also just brushing, just plain old brushing or combing her would hasten that, number mm-hmm. two. Number three, it's just part of nature for the skin to be replenishing its new cells. And I think you'll see a lot of that in the spring, you know, a lot of turnover in the coat. So it sounds like she's getting better. And
it looks horrible, because in the sunlight you can get through the fur and see it. It these clumps of white dead skin cells, and they're just all over her underbody. It looks like it's never going to go away. That's why I was concerned, and I thought maybe if you could, you know, is there a product that makes it come off quicker or easier?
Yeah, the exfoliating shampoos.
Okay, we'll just shampoo her. All right, I'll try that.
Thank you very much.
And I appreciate your advice.
You're welcome,
Lillian.
Thank you very much for calling. This is Vox Pop Pets and Vets. More calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst-Belchertown line. Located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. The Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, announcing the fifth annual series of 10 summer events, sponsored by Saratoga Congregations and Skidmore Office of Jewish Life. SaratogaJewishCulturalFestival.org for schedule. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.clipcentric.com. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, now scheduling spring and summer farm visits for children, teens, and adults. Farmproject.org. And Union Gables Mansion Inn, Saratoga Springs, celebrating 25 years of preserving the Victorian mansion with gardens, wraparound porches, Romanesque pool, fountains, and more. UnionGables.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, veterinarian Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. It's Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Sherry is in Preston Hollow. Sherry.
Hello?
Hi, go right ahead.
Hi. I have a four-year-old dog. She's about 50 pounds. And for her whole life, we've always split our time between New York City and up here in Preston Hollow. And for about the past month, she's decided that she just cannot stand to go outside in the city at all. And I would have taken her to the vet, but she seems perfectly happy when we're in the country. And it's become a problem because, you know, we used to have a routine where we'd go to the park for an hour in the morning, and then she'd go for three or at least three walks a day. And now we have to drag her outside, and she's petrified. So I don't know if that's a medical question or a behavioral question, but I wonder if you had any advice.
Sure, Sherry. First of all, a physical exam will tell you whether or not it's medical or not. Second of all, I wonder, assuming that it's not medical, what happened to your girl to make her phobic about going outdoors in the city? And it might be something that you know about or forgot, or it could be something you didn't even know about. When I had a puppy in New York City, I made the mistake of going down to Riverside Park on July 4th, and all those fireworks, it was a bad idea in retrospect, and she was scared of those kinds of storms for the rest of the time. That's a more obvious instance of something that you know about that might have set her off. But I'd wonder about what made her scared of going out, and then can you address that? So what you want to do as far as behavior modification, if it's important enough to you, and it sounds like it is, Sherry, that you want to desensitize her to whatever she's encountering out there, whether it's the noise or whether it's a crush of people that someone might have stepped on her paw or whatever, there are ways for you to do behavior modification, that some of which are beyond the scope of this radio show. But I would talk to your veterinarian first to rule out the physical possibilities, and then to talk about exercises that you could do for behavior modification. And sometimes we even resort to the use of medication to kind of ease them through that transition, whether it's an antidepressant like Prozac. Generic Prozac is available. It's not the first thing that you reach for. It's the last thing after you've instituted all your behavior modification steps. But there are ways that you could address it. The more of a detective you could be, the more fruitful your measures will go.
Yeah. I have. I've been with her all the time, so there was nothing that I saw, nothing that I noticed. And I know just about when it started to happen.
When?
It was about a month ago, and we were walking through a park, and it was very crowded, and she just freaked out, and then she's been funny ever since. So I can't figure out if it was if it was something specific that happened, but
maybe she got bitten by a bee.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, if it was that sudden and there was nothing else going on that was discernible to you, I'd think about something like that, something that could have happened anywhere, but maybe it never happened upstate and it did happen down there.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess I'll just try with the treats and take her to the vet and see if there's anything else we can figure out.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with you and to you. And
good luck, Sherry.
Thank you very
okay.
much.
Thank you very much.
800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. And we're talking pets and vets today. Our next caller is Kevin in Albany. Kevin, go ahead. Kevin, are you there? Hello, Kevin. Let's try that again. Kevin, are you there? Hello? I suppose not. Okay, let's move on then to Howard in New Paltz. Howard.
Hi, hi. Doctor, I have a question. I spoke to you probably about 6 months ago about stem cell therapy for dogs or cats.
Yes.
And you said you were looking into it for yourself. Did you find anything out that's really valuable?
Yeah, I think that, Kevin, Howard, what you're looking at is it's either stem cell or there are some people that are saying that's platelet-rich plasma. That's causing the improvement. But there's supposed to be a 2 out of 3 success rate in whoever it's done with. Of course, it's going to depend upon, you know, what the animal has, how bad it is, how long they've had it, what their anatomy is like. Do they have a good anatomy, straight bones, that kind of thing, or not? You know, some of the chondrodystrophic dog breeds, they just, some of their anatomy, the conformation doesn't lend itself to having healthy bones and discs and everything. So I think that it can hurt, you know, unless someone does not use aseptic technique and you get an infection. Other than that, I don't know of any downside to it, Howard. So
that sounds good, yeah.
Yeah.
The expense-wise, you know, what do you know about that?
Thousands.
Yes.
I'll say, depending upon where you go and what the company is being used by your veterinarian, and how your vet charges for anesthesia and surgery, et cetera, you're looking at between $2,000 and $3,000.
Hmm. Do they need anesthesia for that, or does it just take a piece of the skin or something?
No, they definitely need anesthesia for the harvesting. And then as far as the injection, and if there's an injection into a particular joint, you often do not need anesthesia. You need some sedation, maybe some heavy sedation. If it's a particularly active animal, maybe you do use some light general anesthesia, but it depends on the animal. But it's for harvesting.
She's only 16. She weighs about 60 pounds, and she goes up and down the stairs really no problem going up and down stairs. But she has a little bit of a limp walking, so she's got some atrophy, whatever you call it, in some parts of her muscle there. So I was just wondering. But she has energy. She just doesn't have that. You know, she has a little bit of pain with arthritis and some other stuff, too.
Well, so listen, wondering. Howard, did you say your 60-pound dog was 16 years old?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would. I don't know if the cost-benefit ratio is enough in the favor of doing the stem cells. What I would start looking into is ruling out Lyme disease, because that can cause a limp. And if it is arthritis, there are plenty of things that you could do for arthritis short of stem cell therapy. I could, you know, rattle off a good 6 odd measures that you could do right now that would be good for arthritis. So it depends.
Yeah, okay, I give a Cosequin tablet. I give it that.
Good, good. The Cosequin's a great thing. A turbocharged way of doing the Cosequin is an injectable called Adequin, A-D-E-Q-U-A-N.
Adequin, yeah.
Fish oil itself is an anti-inflammatory. Okay.
Yes.
Non-steroidal anti-inflammatories are very helpful. There are other things that will help arthritis other than non-steroidal. Say if a dog can't handle it, their stomach can't handle it, they get ulcers, whatever. There are other things. There's, if it's neuropathic pain, there's something for that. You know, gabapentin, and there's painkillers, you know, controlled substances. There's a panoply of things that you could do, Howard, short of stem cells, though I don't want to dissuade you from it.
I try to keep it as natural as possible, you know, without the drug. I give her a lot of greens powder and food every day, you know.
What powder?
It's kind of a mixture of different greens, you know, the hell is it called?
Whatever it's called, I don't know it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, a lot of mixed dried vegetables mixed into a powder, green vegetables.
Well, that can't hurt. That can't hurt.
Yeah. So, but the atrophy part of it, there's nothing you can do about that, I guess.
Well, you could do PT, you know, you could go for plenty of walks and get as much muscle tone in there as possible. But a lot of the muscle atrophy is coming with age. It's part of the territory of growing old. Yeah. So, you know.
All right. Well,
the mind of a puppy.
Thank you for calling, Howard. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Howard.
Has cannabis or medical marijuana come into the veterinary world yet?
It's starting to. Yeah. And we're starting to hear about what to do about cannabis intoxication. You know, dogs are getting poisoned when they're eating a whole ton of brownies or whatever. Mm. The brownies themselves are even worse as far as the chocolate toxicity. Yeah. But as far as has it been used for pain alleviation, I haven't read that much about it, but I think there's stuff going on in California, of course.
Appetite stimulation?
It would be good for appetite stimulation is my assumption, but I haven't read any literature. I haven't seen anyone doing studies, and I don't expect to see that happen.
Yeah, could you legally obtain it at your office?
If you wanted to, in this state.
Right.
But elsewhere, I don't know. I would imagine for an animal, no. I would imagine, I'm guessing, that there has been no law in which it is legalized for a veterinarian to obtain cannabis. That might change as the country changes, but I'm not aware of any availability.
800-348-2551. John in Pittsfield has an email. We have a 9-year-old female, former shelter cat. She's begun to become very withdrawn. We took her to the vet. She's been diagnosed with an enlarged heart. She was prescribed 3 medications. Unfortunately, she's not doing well. Her appetite is not good, and it's difficult to get her to take her meds. I would like to ask the doctor about getting cats to take meds, especially when the appetite is compromised. I think a lot of people, dog and cat owners, have had that problem. Not just when their appetite is poor, but dogs and cats just don't like to swallow pills. How do you get them to do it?
Okay, so there are, what's the call?
John,
name?
John in Pittsfield.
Okay, John. So there are several things that you could use, John. There are appetite stimulants, and some of them are medications. There are also measures you could take to make it more palatable. In other words, heating it up and the aroma will stimulate a lot of cats' appetites. But one medication in particular is called mirtazapine. Mirtazapine is mirtazepine, I think, that you give every few days to a cat. That's an appetite stimulant. Something a little less expensive is called ciproheptadine. It's I think it was originally an antihistamine, and now it's been found that ciproheptadine will give some more appetite to cats. There are probably some other medications beyond that, depending upon the cat. I mean, prednisone will often increase the appetite, but it's at the risk there are downsides to using corticosteroids as well that may or may not outweigh the benefit of eating more. You know, break down muscle protein is what you call a catabolic steroid. So that's more of a last thing that you reach for, the prednisone. I was taught at Cornell, you never let a patient go without at least trying some prednisone, you know. So whereas my training taught me to be very paranoid about the use of prednisone and being very careful with it, avoiding the side effects. On the other hand, they say don't let a patient die without having had the benefit of prednisone. So, you know, toward the later stages, I would consider the prednisone.
Another email from Tiffany. I'll boil it down. Essentially, they just adopted 2 sister kittens, about 5 months old, both spayed. They've been with them 7 or 8 weeks. They were from a feral mother. Now, they're getting along very well with the other cats in the house, especially the 2-year-old males, but they're a little skittish around the people. If you walk towards them, they run away. One will be held, but they're both very skittish around the humans in the household, and they are torties. Does that make any sense? What's a tortie?
Well, a tortoiseshell is someone that the common wisdom is that they're not as easygoing as an orange cat or whatever. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure. It could be true. But I feel for Tiffany because I myself also have taken in a feral cat. It was a kitten. There was a litter. They were wandering around. We trapped 3 of the litter. They were about 2-3 months old. And 2 of my staff took 2 of them. I took a 3rd. And she's a great cat, but she still has retained this running away business. When when you're sitting there nice and still, she will approach. But when you go to her, she runs away immediately. And it was something I thought with time would get better and better. I've seen it get a little better, but not a whole lot better. I think that there are some things, Tiffany, that are just going to stay with the cat to some degree, and over the years they might mellow a bit, but it's hard to predict. It's hard to predict. What you want to do is you want to encourage this cat to come over to you so you could develop a bond, you could develop a trustful relationship so the cat will realize that it's in his or her best interest to come to you, and then you want to reward them for allowing you to get closer and closer. So, oh, you're letting me get within 6 feet of you before you run away? Here's a treat. Oh, you're allowing me to get within 5 feet of you without running away? Here's a treat. And it depends how much time and motivation you have. A lot of people don't have that much time to be able to break down these phobias that they, you know, I mean, it's understandable. They're feral, they're on the street, they get some street smarts, and they learn how to protect themselves, and it's hard at that tender age to obliterate, to extinguish that self-preservation kind of instinct.
800-348-2551. It is Essie in Woodstock. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. I have a toy poodle. He's 6.5 pounds, and he's 13 years old. And recently, he took the IDEX test, and it came out that he has early stage kidney failure. And he's on a very strict diet. I cook for him. And he only has 2 teaspoons of meat a day. And I was wondering, I know there's some controversy about that now, if you hold to the fact that protein should be very limited.
Okay. So, yeah, the common wisdom, Essie, is that the protein should be limited. However, I will say that a conference I went to last month down in Austin, I spoke to one of the kidney experts, the veterinary kidney experts, and his contention was that the phosphorus content of the food is more important than the total protein. Now,
I've read that the phosphorus is important, so I believe I have him on a low phosphorus diet also.
Okay. So,
continue.
I don't know.
That's really interesting what you have to say.
I would be curious where you got your recipe from, Essie, because the total balanced nutrition is the most important thing as I'm concerned with. And then when that has been taken care of and it's a complete and balanced nutrition, I'd want to start paying attention to what exactly that protein and phosphorus content was. So,
a friend went online and we read up about it, and what I'm giving him every day, he eats organic food, is 2 teaspoons of either chicken or beef, and he eats mostly green beans, carrots, sweet potatoes, and acorn squash.
Okay, so, Essie, without getting really complicated, it is way more important that a complete and balanced nutrition be given to your cat than the secondary consideration of what exactly the protein or phosphorus content is, because I'll give you an example. If you don't go to a veterinary nutritionist, I would be very skeptical about where you're getting your information from and what their qualifications are. And I'll give you one example. If you're truly giving 2 teaspoons of chicken or beef and vegetables, there's no calcium in there. So that cat, after a long enough time, will get osteoporosis and will jump down from the couch one day and break a leg.
Okay. Oh.
So you want to make very careful due diligence, so to speak, in making sure that the a recipe is a good one. And a veterinary nutritionist is the most qualified to not only tell you what's a complete nutrition, but what's a complete nutrition that's designed for a dog in early kidney problems. Because that test, the IDEX test, is called SDMA. I'm just saying that the name of the test you're referring to from IDEX is the SDMA. I think it's very helpful because it'll show up a problem way sooner than the ones that we've been using for decades and decades, the BUN and CREAT. So I think that you're on the right track. You do want to make sure that your poodle's blood pressure is okay. And then, depending upon what the phosphorus level is, there are a lot of veterinarians that advocate the use of calcitonin. So calcitriol, rather. So Just a few things to consider that are a little more basic than the phosphorus and protein. Get your basics down, and then I think you're well on your way to doing a great job for your animal.
We lost a cat to kidney failure. It happens a lot to dogs and cats, isn't it, kidney
Much
failure?
More cats than dogs, but it's not uncommon in either case.
Yeah. Why are they so prone to it?
We don't know. Yeah. We don't know, Brian. And what you'll see is it's almost more surprising for me to see a 15-year-old cat or a 16-year-old cat that does not have elevated kidney numbers than one that does. It's just so common across the board, and they go into these, they now call it chronic kidney disease, where after several years, it does take a long time, the kidneys shrink into these little shrunken, irregular organs, and you know that there's something going on. And there's a quality of life issue. Mm-hmm. If they're dehydrated, their quality of life is not as good. If the calcium and phosphorus balance is off, that's a situation. If the phosphorus itself builds up, we often use antacids like aluminum hydroxide. It's kind of like Maalox. Mm. They hate it, but it's good for binding up that excess phosphorus and getting them to feel a little less nauseous. And there are anti-nausea medications, which I actually was thinking of mentioning to our former writer, John, who was asking about the appetite stimulants for his cat, that shelter cat with a heart problem. Heart is different than kidney, but for a kidney problem, we have anti-nausea medications that will often recover some of that lost appetite. So, bottom line, we don't know why cats get so much chronic kidney disease.
Pets and Vets today on Vox Pop. More calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Spate Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls. More than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward. DLSPECHT.com. Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying. Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. And Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC.
Pets and Vets today with veterinarian Dr. Ron Scharf. Our next caller is Lisa in Albany. Lisa.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have about a 7-month-old lab mix, and she gets sick in the car, and it's really an inconvenience. I have another lab mix, and I like to take them on hikes. And I was just wondering if there's anything I can give to her or you would recommend to prevent this from happening.
Sure, Lisa. So that can be very frustrating. I understand your frustration. The first thing that I would think about is behavior modification, and the second thing I would think about is medication if necessary. And there are medications that are very effective at taking care of that. But the better thing with a 7-month-old, she's fairly young, and what you need to do is to try to teach her to be comfortable with the car. So behavior modification is a bit complicated, but basically what you're doing is you're trying to show the dog that it's not that bad being in the car. Okay. And one thing that you could do is, you know, you're trying to tempt them to go into the car, take her favorite treat, and you put it on the very outside lip of where the car door closes, and you get them to get her to take it off there, and then you put it 2 inches closer in and you get her to take it off there. Then you put it all the way in so she has to jump in and get it and then jump out. And then eventually you take these little tiny baby steps and then you turn the motor on and then you get it to take the treat and then you turn the motor off and, you know, praise her. And then you put it in gear and then, and you're getting her to make these little victories that you do a million times. And eventually you hope that you are able to ride around the block one time, you know, like a 30-second trip or something. And if she doesn't freak out, then you're praising her to the skies. You can't be giving her rewards if she's not being calm for all of these little baby steps. Uh-huh. And eventually, the hope is that she could acclimate to the car when she finds out that it's not that bad when it's broken up into little pieces, so to speak. As far as medication, some of the medications, the more common ones we use, have a side effect of sedation. And if you want to be hiking afterwards, that's not the best thing to do. So there is a great newish medication. It's only been out a couple years that does not have any side effect of sedation. And it's an extremely effective and strong anti-vomiting and anti-nausea medication. And it's called Serenia, C-E-R-E-N-I-A. Okay, or meropidant, I think it's called in its scientific name.
I'm sorry, can you spell that one more time for me?
Sure, C-E-R-E-N-I-A.
Okay.
And it comes as both an injectable and a pill. You can get them for home use, so to speak, or I should say car use. And I think that the Serenia, given the fact that you want that dog to be energetic after the trip, would be your best bet, Lisa.
So does that have to come from a vet, or can I buy that from...
No.
Online.
It has to come from a vet. It's a pharmaceutical. It's by prescription only.
Okay. All right. Great.
Thank you.
Good
Thank
luck,
you.
Lisa.
Why would one dog get dogs or car sick and another would not? I mean, you see that with people. Some people get car sick. Some people don't. Is it physical? Is it your perception of movement? What causes the stomach to move around when cars move around?
I can only guess, Brian, not being a neurologist especially, but I assume, I'm guessing, that some people and some animals are more affected by the motion, which has an effect on the balance system, the part of the vestibular system within between the inner ear and the brain that will regulate your position sense. So my assumption is that it has something to do with the position sense, and I assume that the animal watching the stuff going by does not help, because when it's recommended that when a cat has that problem in the car, that you put them in a carrier that's covered.
Right.
Okay, so it's not just a carrier, because a carrier could have holes in it that you could see, but covered so that they're more enveloped in a space that they could still feel the motion of the car, but at least they don't have that motion that they're looking at, trying to focus on something. I mean, most people, if they try to read in the car while they're riding in a car, will also get a little nauseous. What is it? I mean, the words on the page are not moving, so maybe it's not what I'm guessing. So, I don't know.
Bill in Stockbridge. Bill?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So right behind my house is an old shed, and under this shed, I have a mother fox and three kits. Problem is, I own a beagle. My wife walks the beagle by these foxes, and they literally kind of look at each other, stare at each other. The beagle doesn't start barking, and off she goes. My wife gets scared that, you know, geez, are they going to attack? Are they going to interact? It's deteriorated to the point where we have a front yard that's fenced, and at night they're getting in the fenced area and stealing my dog's toys. And I guess my question is, how long do I have to wait before I take some action against the foxes holed up underneath this shed, you know, being that they're kits? And are there any other precautions we can take? And how serious is an interaction with a fox and a dog?
Well, you sure want to make sure that your beagle is up to date on his or her rabies vaccination.
That's all that, yeah.
Good. And that would be the main thing. There are other things that she could catch from wildlife. The another one that I think about is something called leptospirosis, but that's transmitted in the wildlife's pee. So it's an animal coming into contact with the pee. There is a vaccine, by the way, Bill, that'll protect the beagle, a dog, against leptospirosis. There's many others than that besides that, but those are the two main ones that I would think about, rabies and lepto. Now, as far as how long do you have to wait? As far as you being concerned about the welfare of the fox kits, I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about it. I'd just do it. You know, I wouldn't worry about, you know, what's best for them, because it's your property, it's your dog, and
not quite my property.
Well, you are residing on it, okay? And so your welfare and your dog's welfare and your wife's are at stake, okay? And another measure that you could do, I would think about taking a charged wire and putting it around the enclosure that you turn on, you know, in the nocturnal, you know, the twilight hours, the dark hours, so assuming that that's when the foxes are getting into the enclosure, you know, a nice charged wire that goes around the property, the same thing that'll keep, you know, cows in.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
You know, I'm sure that there's a lot of people that would say it's inhumane as far as the foxes are concerned, but I would consider your safety and your dog's safety more important than the fox's safety, personally.
Yeah, when they stayed out back, it wasn't too bad. You know, the dog's on a leash when we're out there, and I'm sure we could kind of control the situation, although, and they obviously don't look rabid, they don't look mangy, so I'm not too worried there, but I was just kind of thinking that, you know, I can let off some kind of smoke bomb under there and drive them out of there, but I don't want to do that until I thought the foxes would live fine in the wild.
No, what I think the best answer, Bill, would be to get someone that knows how to trap animals. You get a humane trap. It's called a Have a Heart. And you trap them, and then you put them somewhere else.
The problem I saw with that, Doctor, was, you know, you get one. You don't get the whole family network. So I was kind of reluctant to go that route.
I totally understand. That's legitimate, and that's possible. On the other hand, it might be possible you can get all of them.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you.
Are foxes or whatever you trap likely to come back? Can they make their way back? Are they that smart to even? You'd have to go miles and miles
away.
Yeah,
I think it depends how far you go. Yeah. You know, surely there's been movies about, you know, I remember a Seinfeld episode where they transported the animal, you know, 100 miles away.
And comes back.
It came back.
You hear those stories of dogs that go across the country, you know.
So I think that it's possible, but it's not likely if you transport them far enough away. You know, I guess what it would take is to figure out, Brian, what an adult fox's range is. So a wildlife person or a wildlife rehabilitator might be in touch with what their range is as far as how much acreage does a fox need to take care of itself beyond which it won't travel, and then transport the animals beyond that range. And I think that would be the way to go.
Barb in Clifton Park, I want to adopt a kitten or young cat, but my husband is fearful the cat will destroy our furniture. What's the best way to train a young cat to sharpen their claws on a scratching post we would provide?
Oh, a scratching post is a great idea, and a scratching post that's sprinkled with catnip is even better. And also, as far as getting your husband, Barb, through the initial period of concern, is that you could put, you could glue caps on a cat's claws. So it's basically a cyanoacrylate. It's kind of like crazy glue. And they outgrow them every 3 weeks or so. You got to replace them several a week. I've done it on my own cats for a long time. Didn't do it enough for my wife's satisfaction, but did do it for a long time. And that would be the best thing to do. Declawing a cat is a little radical. And as a matter of fact, there's a bill in the New York State to make it against the law to do a declaw procedure on a cat. So I would try to steer away from that if at all possible. But I think it also takes handling the cats and getting them socialized so that they understand what is a proper and appropriate way for them to interact with people. So in other words, if they're not retracting the claws enough and they're getting the kittens because they don't know any better, they're too clawy. Well, what does mom do when they're nursing on mom and they bite a little too hard? Mom corrects them. So if they could be gently but convincingly directed in a way that they understand what's an appropriate way for them to relate to people claw-wise, tooth-wise, then they could be trained well. So I think it depends on the person, and you need to seek out some help from someone that knows cats and how to do that.
Dr. Ron Scharf, a veterinarian from Niskayuna, is with us on Pets and Vets. The call is from Brooklyn. Marietta.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two cats. First, the oldest one is about 5 years old, and we've had him for the orange male tabby. And about 6 months ago, a family member couldn't keep her kitten, also an orange male tabby. And so we have them both. And the older one's kind of an introvert, the younger one's an extrovert. And, you know, they don't, it's not a hateful situation, but the little one wants to play all the time, and the older one kind of get very vocally, you know, hisses and he meows and swipes at him. The little one reacts by kind of nonchalantly just backing off. So my concern is, I don't know whether, you know, there's anything we can do to reduce this kind of behavior. It's not like they really ever play just for fun, or maybe this is fun. I just don't even know. And I'm scared about the older one getting a little stressed out, although he, too, doesn't seem to be too freaked out. He just kind of moves away. So is this something I should be worried about? And is there anything I can do about it?
It's impossible, Marietta, to predict the future, but I like the fact that the older one, the bigger one, is not terribly stressed out by it, because we're all allowed to have our own reactions to whatever change in circumstances we encounter, including cats. And it's common for a cat, the incumbent cat, to not be happy about the new cat, especially if the new cat is invading the incumbent cat's space more than the incumbent cats used to. And so you want the five-year-old to be able to teach the younger cat what's okay and what's not okay. So they do that by hissing, and they do it by sometimes making physical contact, whether it's a scratch or a bite. And that's nature, and it's fine. And the only thing you need to hope for is that no eyeballs are contacted, okay, by claws. And it doesn't sound like your older cat is that stressed out about it. So I think you want them to thrash it out on their own, but you also want to consider getting a feline pheromone, a synthetic pheromone, Marietta, that's called Feelaway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y, and that'll often take a little of the edge off inter-cat friction.
Oh, great. So that's something that I'd give them, or is it like a thing that I spray in the air?
You spray it on the places where they hang out, or you plug it into an outlet in the areas that they hang out in. Okay.
Oh, great.
So.
Well, that also helps them, you know, de-stress them for getting into the car because we take them on long trips. Obviously, you know, I'm calling you from Woodstock because we travel back and forth. So, is that also helpful for that, do you think?
I think if you kept the car sprayed, then it might have a good effect. Sure. Also, the cats that have trouble traveling, we kind of touched on this in the other caller, oftentimes will be better off if you, number one, acclimate them to the carrier, so make it a good place, make it a place that they will choose to get in, because you're putting their favorite treat or their favorite toy in there, so you leave the carrier out, basically, at home, so that you're decoupling their bad associations of traveling with the actual carrier itself. And then when you are traveling, you should cover that carrier. So in other words, put a towel over it so they're not overstimulated. And there are some other measures that you could take to acclimate a cat to traveling. Sometimes there are some nutraceuticals, so to speak. They're not drugs, but they are over-the-counter products that your vet might have that might take some of the edge off. There's one called Anxitane, A-N-X-I-T-A-N-E or T-A-I-N-E, I forget. So there are various things you could do. Talk to your vet, Marietta, and I think that tincture of thyme will also help them smooth things over.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Only about a minute left, Doctor. Probably not enough time for another call, but 30 to 60 seconds. Is Zika a threat to our pets?
Oh, wow, Zika, that's interesting. I personally have not heard of any animals getting Zika yet. I don't know whether or not it'll happen. It's not common to have cross-species problem, though it's happened. I mean, the bird flu, and, you know, one day there's a mutation, and we all have to start worrying. So I personally have not researched it enough to know how similar it is to the nearest virus that would do a number on animals. So I assume it's potentially a problem, but that has not been shown to my knowledge so far.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming in. We're just about out of time. I'd like to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those left on the line. And a big thanks to our guest, Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Support for WAMC comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenandParent.com. Interim Healthcare, 45 years working to help people age in place. Companions, aides, and nurses, 7 days a week, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga. InterimHealthcare.com. Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the capital region and beyond. Marketing creative and business ideas since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. Hudson Farmers Market, 6th and Columbia Street, Hudson, providing products and seasonal produce for more than 30 growers and producers, Saturdays 9 a.m. to 1 through November. Hudson Farmer Market, NY.com. Thanks again for joining us today. Engineer Zach Malloy, calls answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Brian Shields. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, it's gardening. Now a news update in 51%.